Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, it's time for lulls. I know sometimes you guys tune into this program for GPP talk, sim talk, all that stuff. Not today. No, I'm putting an end to all that bullshit. The Cash Game King is here. I am curious to hear, how Brian's new year went, but I'm not going to let him talk about the usual bullshit he wants to around here. I'm Pete, aka the Cash Game King. It's time for lulls. Let's do it.
He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What?
Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in 1 for yes, 2 for no. Let the DFS guys pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
If you don't dupe me this week in our head-to-head, you played bad. That's what I'll say out there. How we doing, Brian? How was your New Year's?
Oh, good. Can't complain. It's pretty. The weather's pretty nice for January around here, Pete. How about you?
Yeah, not to get political. It's called global warming, Brian.
bring it on.
It's funny you say that because we got out both Christmas Day and New Year's Day and went with long walks with April, which is nice because I just, during the spring and the summer, we get out all the time. And then we've had a stretch where it had been really cold and been kind of locked up inside. So, yeah, been nice to get out a little bit here. But, yeah, I'm getting excited for the season to be over, taking some things off of my plate, ejecting from the rat race of everything right now. So yeah, looking forward to that.
Before BBM starts up, Pete.
I know. I think it was, last year they launched the big board. I think it was before the Super Bowl started. It was like after conference championships and before for the Super Bowl. And I sat out of that for like a month. And I might even sit out of that stuff even longer this year. I'm going to take a decent amount of time off in February and March.
It's like a science experiment. Find the most sick individuals that GPP.
Oh, well, I will tell you, one of them, name rhymes with Schmavis Kadek. will be
right in. Point proven.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Did you do anything fun for New Year's?
No, just hung out with family.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I was like going through like my Instagram stories and like seeing some people at like house parties or out at bars or clubs, and I'm like, oh man, this part of my life feels so far away from me. Yeah. So far away in the rearview mirror, I should say.
Yeah, I think the big part of that is your buddies also don't do it anymore. So like if they were doing it, maybe there'd be something to do, but they're not even doing anything anymore either.
No, it's. It's not happening. Maybe it'll go full circle, when the kids get older and stuff like that, or maybe I'll just go full hermit and I'll just always stay in my house.
Be like, at some old folks, gin rummy party or something.
Honestly, like to me, not the gin rummy part, but a good little home game poker night with the boys drinking some beers. That doesn't sound like a bad New Year's to me.
That's what Dan told me he used to do. He would go to the poker house on New Year's.
What's funny about that is my introduction to poker, it was on a New Year's Eve, and I'll never forget it. It was New Year's Eve 2003. I was a sophomore, junior in high school, and my friend's dad, he knew we liked to gamble, and we were playing all the other games, like in between the sheets and deuces and all this. He's like, let me teach you guys hold'em. So New Year's Eve, we're at his house, and his dad comes down and like gets us all set up and teaches us how to play our first poker tournament. And then for the rest of high school, all we did was play poker. So yeah, my origin stories of New Year's Eve involve Texas Hold'em.
Interesting. I can't even remember. I must have played as a kid, but eventually during high school it took over and everyone was playing.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. It was funny because I don't know if you saw the guy on Twitter and I wrote about this in my newsletter. So he made BBM. He drafted one team and made it. And he messaged me and was like, I went to high school with you and I used to play at poker tournaments at your house. And he was one of my brother's friends, which is why I didn't immediately like recognize him. But I got like so many comments from people who couldn't wrap their head around what was very much a mid early 2000s phenomenon of just hosting home game poker tournaments. Like people were like, wait, what? I was like, oh yeah, we would have 30 to 40 kids over at our house for a poker turn, $5, $10 buy-in. Like this was, we called that a Tuesday, like in the 2000s. Oh, yeah.
I played hundreds of those, man. You know, or like, you know, if you're a little older, some people would put it together as like at a bar, a little poker game or yeah, that was – poker was – that's why they're saying there's like a renaissance of poker. It's like I don't – you know, I'm out of touch. But like it seems – it doesn't seem like it was in the early 2000s. Like everyone and their mother literally was playing poker back then.
Yeah. The – yeah, I wonder – like that – there was something too because I just – there can't be that phenomenon that like existed for us where people were hosting home games. And I do think like – maybe that's a byproduct of COVID and how all this stuff works where, you know, people watch the poker vloggers, that stuff has blown up, but I feel like they're just going to the casino now to play or go play in the tournaments or whatever.
Maybe so. Yeah.
It's, you know, gathering each other up to play tournaments that maybe if it's happening, I guess it's not on my radar.
I mean, you remember like the poker chips, right? Like poker chip sets were even big.
Oh yeah.
You know, so, oh, this guy's got a real nice chip set.
Oh yeah, I remember when I splurged for the nice cards, you know, the ones that you could like put in the washing machine or in the dishwasher or whatever.
And you keep them in the fridge.
Did yeah.
You have those? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, did I tell you my other funny poker story? So when I got really into it in high school, there was at the mall by my house, there was like a poker store, like this guy, this old guy who just loved it. And he, you know, you'd buy poker sets, poker tables, all this. He'd have all the DVD collections. And, you know, to drum up business, he would host a weekly cash game tournament or a weekly tournament. And it clearly had to have been illegal. Like, I'm sure he's not allowed to host a poker tournament in the mall. But then it would be all of us high school kids who would come and play, you know, $5 to $10 or whatever. And I realized after the fact, and we already pieced it together, that I played CSU Ram 88, Peter Jennings, at that mall poker table. And I literally remember playing Jennings because he was the only person that I ever sat at that table who was better than me. Like everyone else was like loose passive. And I came from my home games. I thought I was hot shit, like aggressive. And Peter was even more aggressive than me. And he was the first time I was kind of like intimidated by someone else playing outside of my home game circle. And we backed it out. He's like, oh yeah, I used to go play there all the time. And I like remember his like 17-year-old face from playing against him at the mall in, you know, it would have been 2005 or something.
Oh, wow. People do not have any clue how bad poker players were back then. It was just free money. You know, if you raise first in, it's like, holy cow. Okay. Slow down, pal.
Yeah, relax. There you go. Oh, family pot, right? Little family pot here.
Let's see a hand. Let's get to see a hand here.
Oh my God. Yeah, like that was the thing. Like I thought I was good at poker. I was not. I was really good at beating my buddies. Is what I was really good at because they were so bad that they made me think I was the best poker player on the planet, and I was not.
Yeah, that is a common that's like pre-internet type of stuff, you know, like video games do work that way, you know, like I'm the best, you know, Bond GoldenEye player in the world. It's like, yeah, I bet you'd get your ass kicked if this was online.
When did it, and what was, because you've talked a little bit, but you played, I assume you got introduced similar and then you went down the rabbit hole, played online, and then you just got so burned out from playing cash.
Yeah. Almost exclusively cash for poker. Well, but the main, I was really burned out even when Black Friday happened. So I was probably not going to be playing much longer anyways. Oh, but I had bills, you know, and a lot of them that was paid through poker. So I had to keep playing at that point. But when Black Friday happened, that was pretty much the end. I did the, what was the sites called? There was like a Microchip, I think, network that still like illegally served Americans. It was Black Chip Poker. I remember I went over there for like 6 months and then that was it. And I can't. Yeah. Black Chip. Yeah. They had rake back too, which was nice. But then, like, as soon as every American went on their site, they got rid of the rake back because they didn't need to, you know, incentivize anyone because there was nowhere else to go.
Yeah, I feel like there were a couple guys at my college at the time. So this would have been like 2006, who were playing poker like almost semi-professionally to pay, you know, for stuff like that. But like, I feel like it definitely got romanticized in that thing where it was like, holy cow, I can make a decent living or whatever playing poker. But it sounds like you were just like, I don't enjoy this, but I need to do it because it's a way to make money and pay the bills.
Yeah, playing the quarters on like party poker in 2002 or whatever. Yeah, you can make 15 grand doing that, like just doing something. But eventually the competition got really hard, and when you're playing 5, 10, 10, 20, and especially PLO around that time, you know, you're swinging 20, 40, 80k, it wears on you. And there really is something with the head-to-head competition aspect. Like with DFS, like, I don't care if you beat me, Pete. You know what I mean? In a GPP with 300,000 other people.
I mean, let the record show, I do care, and you won't be beating me this week. But anyways, continue.
In a cash game, yeah. Cash games head-to-head. But in the GPPs, it's not. I don't know. Like, if somebody else wins, like, great. Go, you know, good for you. But in poker, when someone tricks you, like, it fucks with you. It fucks with you more. It definitely messes with you.
And this was back when those, you know, the pure days of poker, right? Where you were sitting at your computer, you weren't worrying about a HUD, a bot.
I had a HUD, dude. So far. I had Poker Tracker. I had the HUD going. You know, my database was so big anyways, but you could also buy data on players you wouldn't use. There's also tools like Ninja Table, I think it was called, where it would sit. It was basically bum hunting tools that would sit you at tables with the worst players from their data, stuff like that. There was also like hotkey tools. So like you could set your mouse, you know, you'd get like a mouse with like 7 buttons, and then you'd hotkey them all. So you could play 10, 20 tables at once and fold, 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 you know, three quarters bet, you know, half pot bet, whatever, you set your size and all that type of stuff. So you can multi-table.
Goodness.
There was seating too. So like it would just open 10, like whatever your, I would play usually 10 tables, but sometimes I would play more. It would just open them to the exact spots on my monitor, you know, and format them all. So.
Oh, like order them based on if you were, if it was your turn to act.
And it would highlight them with red. If a timer possibly coming up.
Yeah.
But I meant like if you open like a PokerStars table, who knows what it is now, it might be automated. But if you open a PokerStars table, for example, back in the day, it would just pop up in a random size, but you want it as a, you know, small little cube so you can fit 5 tables per. And then you have to, you know, tables break up and stuff. So you're constantly adding tables and taking tables away. Yeah.
That's crazy, man. Well, you don't ever seem to sound like you miss that part of your life, though.
No, but talking about it kind of makes me bring back. That was kind of fun. It was fun. It was fun not having a job. I'll tell you that much.
Yes.
Quitting my job and probably not the best career move you can make. Actually, it's a pretty bad career move. I don't recommend it for anyone. But.
Well, wait, what were you doing before when you quit to play poker?
I was working in minor league baseball.
Oh, okay.
I was a director of a small minor league stadium on the south side.
How did you get that gig?
It sounds like it's a big deal. Like no one wants to do those jobs. They pay people who are like 1-2 years out of college nothing to do 80 hours a week. It's like, you know, chess is okay, except you don't make any money.
Jeez. Did you have it like in your head where you like, this will be my foot in the door to like work in sports or work in baseball?
Of course. Yeah. That was my exact strategy. I didn't want to go to college. I hate fucking school. And I'm like, if I have to go, what can I pick?
Yeah.
Sports. I want to be Billy Bean. So sports management.
You were thinking you get like a Goodwill Hunting thing where you're like managing the building, and then on the chalkboard you wrote like your Moneyball philosophy, and they walk by and they're like, "Ooh, I like that."
I did do that. I actually did that. It's very good. My GM, so that there was a nice stadium in Joliet, and I worked there. That was my first job, and I got a meeting with the GM and showed him how you could use Bill James has just like this simple formula. These formulas are so archaic now, but they were really interesting. Back then, how you could look at runs totals in baseball and then and predict how many wins the team should have. And so like I just showed him, tell me how many runs they have. And then I do the little equation. I go, they should have 14 wins or whatever. And he's like, they have 14 wins. This is amazing. and so he's like, he offered me a job to be like work with the baseball operations department, because there's independent leagues. This is why I wanted to specifically work in independent leagues, because they pick their own players. If you work for, you know, the Columbus, whatever, you know, the Pawtucket Red Sox, they get the Red Sox tell them who to pick, like who's playing this year. So you have no player personnel experience. Right. So you have to work in an independent ball. And then after the season was over, it's like, a week later, I didn't get a call. 2 weeks later, I didn't get a call, and then I contacted him. He's like, "We don't have the money for that job. Sorry." It's like, "You motherfucker! You could have told me." So I got another one, and then I tried to pull the same move with this GM, who was an ex baseball player, who was in a book about baseball player superstitions. So like the most superstitious baseball players, he's number one. What is that called? Where he has some sort of phobia where if you touch him, he has to touch you last. So he was on the Cleveland Indians, and Rick Sutcliffe would fuck with him. And so like, he'd be taking a shit and Sutcliffe would go under the stall and touch his foot and then run away. And so he didn't know who did it. So he'd have to go in and touch everyone in the organization.
That's
wild. He got tagged out at second during the middle of a game. And it was the third out. So the guy, you know, tags him out and quickly heads back to his own dugout. He went into the opponent's dugout to touch him.
That is absurd. Has there been a 30 for 30 on this guy? It feels like there needs to be.
There should be. And I'm pretty sure he's illiterate. Because like, I know he'd be like looking over my shoulder. And I'd be like, yeah, you know, it says this right here. He's like, what does it say? I'm like, the? And so I got my meeting like with him to try to pull the same thing. I'm like, oh, this Neanderthal is going to just be, it's going to be like showing fire, you know, to a Neanderthal, like, ooh, fire. Yes. And so I give him my spiel at lunch, and he goes, and he was a scout. He was the head scout for the Indians after he retired. And he goes, Brian, you know how you can tell a player is good? And I'm like, how? And he goes, the shape of their jaw. They have a specific shape, and this is how you draft your players. And I'm and like, as he's giving me this, I'm like, oh, I gotta get out of this. I gotta get out of this sport.
This does sound like what should be the prequel to Moneyball. This is how things got done before.
Yeah.
It's our astrology for making showdown lineups. So.
And I mean, but I did, honestly, I did. It wasn't for nothing. All that stuff I eventually used for DFS, like all that sabermetric stuff. I reused. And it is like I know Alex Baker does like a lot of jokes like this, but it really is like you control it. You don't need some dumb ex scout with, you know, psychiatric issues to, you know, ruin your hopes and dreams. You can just fuck balls by the horn and play cash game DFS, get that 0.7% equity.
Do you think there's alternate versions of your life where something breaks and that you just have a long career working in an MLB front office?
It's pretty small, because as I found out, as I got into politics and stuff, how that works, most of those jobs. Wow. Yeah. That guy actually called the guy's name. That is his name. What was I talking about? Most of those jobs are like politicians' kids, and they're like John Paxton's son was working for the White Sox in one of those jobs. And Even in the minor league team, like one of the owner's kids was working there with me, stuff like that. Like it's really tough, and you don't make any money. And there's like eight of the jobs. It was an insane plan.
Yeah.
From the start.
And I mean, now those jobs are so coveted as well. Like I had, so this kid I went, that I knew growing up, and he was one of the best high school players in the state. And I knew him actually from going to church. And then he went on to be the all-time leading scorer at MIT. He was also like a super smart dude. And then he got a job in like the Spurs front office, and it was like less nepotism. Like he had the connections from being like within the basketball world, but was also really smart. And it's like now those jobs are so sought after that you basically need both of those, like really well networked, you know, all of that, but also like really smart too. Like there's no easy ways to get those kind of jobs.
Yeah. I worked with a guy who came from the Spurs ticket department at one of those teams. And a problem with that is, if you get a job in sports, it's usually in the sales department. And now what are you qualified for? Sales. And so like, you just get, so like I got an interview with the Marlins and some guy, some headhunter had connections with the Marlins and the Lightning, whatever, some Florida professional teams. And they're all like sales gigs. And I did like one interview and the guy does the whole, okay, let's do a mock sales call. And I'm like, oh no, I'm not going to do good at this. Like, oh, hi, Pete. How are you? How many tickets do you want? So it's so uncomfortable.
That is hilarious. I'm now imagining you having to do the improv for that.
I was like, I'm not getting this job. I'm not moving to Florida. I might as well just hang up.
Yeah, I was trying when I first moved out to Boston, and one of them ended up being I tried to get an on-air job at DraftKings. This was even before I started doing like man's content. This was like a long time ago. And then what was I going to say? Oh, but like the Celtics had a job open that was like kind of like an on-camera thing. And like, so for me, it's like, oh man, this seems like a dream job or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember being demoralized because I went in. It was basically like a casting call type thing where there were like hundreds of people and they probably had already handpicked who was going to be the person. I'm like, what am I even doing? Like, I have no chance at getting this kind of shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, that's probably true.
Yeah. Yep. Which it is, you know, it's funny reminiscing about this era of getting jobs where now so much of everything, and you can even talk about some of those NFL gigs, like the people who get those now, and we even see them from the fantasy space, guys like Eric Eager with the Carolina Panthers, their resume is their online content. Their reel is what they do on camera. Like that is now how you do it. You create your own opportunities now, which is much more cool than just like spraying and praying and knowing you're never going to get it.
I mean, eventually they'll be bigger than like the sports are dying. Like the NBA's ratings are down and people aren't paying for that. So like, yeah, you might make something online even eventually bigger, like Joe Rogan. I mean, not to like bring Joe Rogan up, but like he's bigger than CNN.
For sure. I mean, listen to how the conversation after the election was. I mean, people were legitimately thinking Kamala not going on his podcast could have had to do with like tilting the election. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, I do love that. I mean, that is what's awesome about the skill-based gambling games too, is you could do your own, you could do it yourself. You don't have to have a boss, like let them make decisions. Online's the same way now.
Well, and even just look at your kind of, you know, arc through in so many people, right? As far as starting out as just a player, and then you build some tools, you meet some people, you start a site, you make content, you look at how ETR started with those guys back there with Card Runners, and then like understanding like the business, like the way you can kind of create something out of nothing just by existing within the world you like spending time in.
What would you, every position is spoken for, Don says here. What would you rather have? Let's say 5 years of that on-camera gig, but you can't have any social media side gig ever. Mm-hmm. So you get your thing you have now, or you could have got that job for like 3-5 years. What would you rather have?
It's not even close. And I think about this all the time. When I got turned down for the DraftKings, it was the one of their like on-air position. Adam Kaufman, a lot of people know him. He's the one who got the job I applied for. I would not want that job. Like there's zero interest in having that. Like if I had to go into an office every day and do all that stuff and write scripts about what someone's telling me to write scripts about or whatever it is. And I'm not saying this as a knock to Adam, but I'm just saying in your hypothetical of like right. getting to do whatever you want at home and calling your own shots, like it's not even close, which yeah. is wild of how you think your old self couldn't fathom not wanting that as your dream job, couldn't even fathom it. And yeah. now it's like, no, you would turn that down in a heartbeat.
Yeah. It was a different world. It's hard to get our mindset that it's not, you know, 1999 anymore, you know, or whatever. The world has like MTV or something. Like no one cares. You know, you'd much rather have 100,000 followers as a musician who really like your stuff than a video on MTV. No one's going to see that shit.
Yeah. I mean, and even like it extends all the way. I mean, there's some massively cringe things about like influencer culture, but you see the way that, I mean, like the biggest market movers are the people with the biggest followings on TikTok and stuff like that. I mean, these guys have more influence than almost any bit of legacy media. And then you see people, you know, like Tucker Carlson has way more influence now than he ever did on Fox, like with his yeah. own podcast and his clips and all of that. I mean, obviously Joe Rogan, but those guys, they move stuff in such a bigger way than they used to.
For sure. You know, what's going to, I think it's going to start happening. I was thinking about this is everyone's going to realize this if they haven't already. And then now that will be like me trying to get a job, like try to be Billy Bean and failing. A lot of people are going to start trying to be online influencers. And I know there already are, but like to the point of like, someone's got to go like, homeboy, you don't have talent at this. You're not going to get 100,000 followers. Well, it's not like it's a mature market. It's tough to get followers now.
Yeah. Well, no, I was just going to say that exact thing. People, I mean, you could try like the market will tell you, right? Because right. not only do you have to be good, but you have to be consistent and you have to do it over and over and again. Like you could be the best at it in the world, the most natural talent ever. You're still going to probably have to spend a year grinding just to get people to notice you.
It's strange. Cause you grow up thinking, you know, everyone has like at least a little bit of a complex about like, oh, you know, what are they, you know, do I have something on my face? You know, what do other people think about me? And it turns out they don't care about you. they're not thinking about you at all. And you try to get someone to even like one of your tweets. You know?
Well, how many times have you seen the tweet, like the unironic ones that'd be like, to everyone hating on this, or like to all the haters out there. And then you see the post and you're like, I didn't see any of the like hating comment, but now I want to go look and find where these people were saying it. But you're the one drawing attention because no one else actually gives a shit about it.
Exactly. No one does that. There is that effect online though, of that mob mentality. Oh, somebody said, one of the things you're not supposed to say, let me tweet at him.
Well, that's one of my favorite things to like parody. Like, you know, what I'm doing this week, the cash game is just like, everyone's in my mention saying this. And then you go and look at the person's actual mentions. There's like one guy who like made an offhanded comment. They're like, everyone's coming after. It's like, you had one person say that to you. Relax.
That you had a corollary bit, right? Where you said, I lost a lot of followers this week. That's the same. I lost some followers. Like, no, you didn't.
I actually did. I did. It was because the only reason I knew is because I was at like 47.1K and I saw it go back to 47K. And so I was like, oh, I definitely lost followers.
Yeah, that could be just he's getting rid of bots or something. Yeah.
I lost, it was like 25 followers or something, which I do think happens when you go on a Twitter blitzing spree. Like people remember, like, why do I follow this person? Oh, maybe. And then it just unfollow. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah. I would unfollow me too. So yeah, there's
no, this is one of your best bets for sure. That sports betting guy is definitely someone who is using the, in my opinion, he wants us to retweet him. Like the guy who did the topless photo. Yeah. Pull this guy up.
Yeah. So Brian sent me this and I immediately knew who it was because he's been all over my feed recently. And he doesn't even have that many followers. He has to be adding a good bit. It's Blez Betts. And I honestly have like only seen a few of his videos, but he has like made some noise by saying like the sportsbook are denying his bet. And then what was it? You sent me a shirtless photo of him.
Yeah, I have no idea.
What is his angle? I literally haven't done enough like looking into what his bid is.
I have no idea. I just saw this topless shirt of his, and I'm like, this feels like a Cash Game King bid.
Let me click the initial link you sent me. Here we go.
Yeah.
So, so he has this beef he's doing with Jeffrey Benson, you know, the director of operations at Circa, and he's pretty active on Twitter, and he says, heading to Circa to hammer the Ohio State Oregon game, Jeffrey, I love also how in his head he's going to battle directly with the director of operations when he places a bet, and then posts this, one of the most unflattering shirtless photos I've ever seen. And then Jeffrey Benson absolutely ratios him with put a shirt on for God's sake.
I don't get why it's sometimes parody and reality. Who knows what this guy's thinking, but like, it feels like this is like, he's like, if I post this, everyone's going to retweet it and quote tweet me and make fun of me. And I'm going to get a ton of content. And so I was going to quote tweet him about, you know, this is the problem with youth of America and why, you know, I'm making this great sacrifice. But then I'm like, but that's what he wants.
And apparently, of course, as all of this stuff goes, he's selling some kind of VIP package. Apparently has a lot of subscribers on there. I don't know if subscribers equal people paying $59 for this package. Probably not. But has 11,677 subscribers over there.
Again, all these should be like tests to like lose your vote. You know, like, did you subscribe to this Blaz guy? Like, you lost the right to vote, you know, a litmus test.
He is pretty good at engagement farming. This is how I stay locked in 100% of the time.
Do you think that's actually his room?
I kind of do.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. It falls in the, like, it's this weird middle territory. Like, if you're dissecting a bit where it's like half serious, half real, right? Like, you know, posting like the money with the cash, but then it's just dweeb enough to be funny. But like deep down, you know, he also really thinks he's a baller with this stuff.
If you, I mean, cause you can do an AI of this nowadays, this looks real though, but you should do a something with cash. Unfortunately, you'd have to go to the bank and actually get a bunch of cash, but it would be a funny, what the?
Everyone in the chat is saying his brother is known for breaking card packs. Why is breaking a sports card pack at World Series of Poker such a notable thing? He just opened, like, he made it a big deal.
Those card pack guys are actually like get really popular.
Oh yeah.
If you were to create an AI sports betting tout, would it look like Vegas Dave or, you know, some pop? What would you think would be the most successful? Or would it be Taylor Mathis? Probably Taylor Mathis.
Well, Taylor Mathis, you mean just in general, like if you created an influencer in a lab?
Sure. In a lab or AI, whatever.
Yeah. Here's the question. Would it be Taylor, but like actually sharp? Or do you think that would take away from it? What if Taylor was Captain Jack?
Well, yeah, I guess what's our goal? To make the most amount of money from subscribers or just get the most amount of followers?
I think our end goal here is to make the most money.
Okay.
I think a super smart Taylor is probably
gifted. Because then you get everybody.
Everybody.
Cause then you get everybody. It's like, yeah, I got to pay the $1,000 a month because she's got the best information. I know she's a thirst trap, but
she's doing walking arm tutorials.
she's like showing like this regression model.
Here's how to shop around for the best price.
she's got like some deep, you know, machine learning process she shows herself doing on the computer.
Dude, I want, you know, the remember there's this old graphic that went around when David Montgomery was coming into the league, and it was like saying what he was like as a prospect, and it was like the vision of Frank Gore, the bot, the speed of Emmett Smith. I forget all the ones it is. It's like, we should make a sports betting tout. That's like, it's like the body of Taylor, the engagement farming skills of Sal Vetri, the brain of Captain Jack, just to create the super sports betting influencer.
Oh, the $1 million sports, the $6 million.
Davis got Taylor Mathis.
Davis. You need Davis's certainty for sure. Davis's certainty is got to be part of the tout for sure. There can be no like, you can't be nerdy tenor. You can't be like, well, you know, this could be wrong. We have to think of
the, you know what? Like Davis could legit do the like Alex Caruso thing where he just like rips off just like the highest confident bets and then just moves on. Like I guarantee this guy just mutes the thread. He had a wild one, I think, on must have been Monday night. It was like Jahmyr Gibbs under lowest reception. And he just got absolutely ratioed. And it, man, he does so many bets. I can't even find the one from Monday night. My God, dude. How many of these do you do?
How many followers does he have? This has got to be all automated, right? Does he even do anything?
I think he's
combing through the data every day, or do you think he's just.
Yeah, I think he does it. What does this say? Bad beat refund time. Do you have a horrific bad beat this weekend? I'm giving away 200 for the worst bad beat in the comments. That's good engagement farming there. Yeah, he's had some crazy ones. I can't even find all of these. Okay, here it was. Hammer the under on this. Jahmyr Gibbs under 13 and a half longest reception. And the first reply is worst bet I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, he almost got ratioed.
Yeah. But honestly, I would like to see Davis. Davis could pivot to this kind of content. Just lock of the day. And you just mute it and move on and just farm engagement.
What about the topless shirt picks? You think that he should do that too?
Go C-Blez style?
Like C-Blez, yeah.
Yeah. Man, speaking of the influencer stuff, the other one I had pulled this up because I retweeted it this morning. So, you know, Mr. Beast, right?
This
like made me sad.
Why?
This made me sad. This dude is like on his way to being a billionaire and he couldn't even do his engagement without turning it in to a promotion for his Mr. Beast ugly sweater Christmas. That's what my tweet is referencing. All three of them are in Mr. Beast ugly Christmas sweaters. It's so sad.
His wife looks pretty, but so I don't care. But the he's getting a good shape, huh?
Brian, our eyes are up here, okay?
Hopefully it doesn't work out for them. Doesn't that look like the Brady's, like modern day Brady's house?
Well, that's the other thing about it. It's in like one of those houses that, you know, when they call them like a content house in LA that they like rent out and all the influencers live in them. It has like the least homey feel to it I've ever seen. Like the glass stairway up the stairs. Oh, it just makes
me think so sad. To get to the top. You have to be this insane though, maybe.
I think you do. That's literally what I had that thought. I'm like, it's same with like an Elon, right? To be that successful, you have to have some part of your brain that's just completely broken.
Yep. And that's probably what this is like every second of every day since he was 15. He's like, oh, I gotta do better content. Gotta do that. I can make this in the content. I got grandma dying. I can make in the content.
Well, and just imagine him beforehand being like, I really need us all to wear these sweaters today. And it's like, really? Really? And you know, I can't tell you now, but you just really need, and just make sure you notice there's the camera over there when I get down on one knee. I don't know. It made me sad. I was just like, you are so wildly successful. Like, you can't just have this moment. Like, obviously, take the photo, but you could just have a normal moment, man.
Yeah. But I could also picture the person he marries is
likes that.
It's like, oh, let's put on your Mr. Beast sweaters for the photo.
Maybe that's true, that it takes a sycophant to fall in love with you, who is knowingly or willingly signing up to you doing this for the rest of your lives together.
I can't imagine she's like, I'm not comfortable with your whole, you know, internet, your whole vibe. It's like, then she's not going to get married to this guy.
All that said, congratulations to Mr. Beast. May you guys live happily ever after.
I just always think about Davis going, Mr. Beast says the open mouth Met is dead.
And that's why Davis launched the new meta, which is constipation face.
Is that what?
I just feel like all of Davis's now are like,
I said, can we go to his channel? I haven't looked in a while. I want to see these. Does putting your own face
fit?
Oh yeah.
It's the constipation meta.
What was the a beautiful sim that was today?
Wait, you guys did it? Oh man, you guys didn't do a sim show last week, did you?
No, we didn't last week. We did one earlier.
Save it. You guys do it. I love the sim shows all year. And I'm not just saying this because I'm a cash game king. There might not be anything more useless than a sim show on Thursday morning of week 18 when the slate is getting flipped on its head every fucking 14 seconds.
Agreed. But Davis is in Mr. Beast mode, so he needs the content. So
he's got Mr. Beast mode.
He took 10 new constipated pictures, Pete, and he's not letting them go to waste. Okay.
Honestly, I would not be surprised if this show happened simply because Davis had already committed to doing a Beautiful Mind parody thumb and did not want to let it go to waste.
No, he's like, this is too good. A beautiful sim.
I feel like
Mr. Beast has been getting some bad press. Maybe that's another reason for the getting married thing. Dudes do that. Remember, that was like an old school thing. Back in the day, celebrities, whenever they get in trouble, they announce that they're either an alcoholic or they're getting married.
Well, yeah, and because doesn't he have some like litigation stuff going on right now?
Wouldn't surprise me. Yeah. I mean, whenever you get that big, you're going to get sued, but.
Yeah. Pentagon approved funds for Mr. Beast, Kelly Clarkson, and Guy Fieri last year.
Oh, that seems like a good way to spend taxpayer money.
Was there a lawsuit? YouTube star Mr. Beast sued by contestants claiming toxic and hostile environment and unfair wages. Oh, this was from a while ago. But I don't know if that. Yeah, there's been he's had a few scandals. He had a pretty squeaky clean image for a while, but then
he got too big.
Very big.
He got too big. I mean, like, and then even like the charity stuff now was controversial, you know? Like, you shouldn't glamorize and profit off of charity.
Right.
Like, he's giving like millions of dollars to these people. Can't you just fucking
Oh yeah. There was this too. One of his content guys was
Right. Yeah.
That was one of the big ones. Yeah. Also, like, he's obviously incredibly good at content, but he's also now in this pattern where all of his stuff is just, it's like the same formula where it's like, let me pay people wild money or concoct this crazy stunt where I push people to like the brink of what like humans could or should do. And then I will make a little mini documentary about it. It's just like Fear Factor writ large. And everyone's like, oh, he spent $10 million on it. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
Like every single thing is just like Hunger Games for YouTube. And it plays really well, but he like has one note right now. Like there's only one note to be played.
Right. Yeah. Cause you kind of think of it like he's in a room with a bunch of guys and they're just spitballing, you know, crazy ideas. And it's kind of similar each time.
This is what happens when you become a slave to the algorithm, is very specific things work. And once you've tasted that success of like, oh, this is how you get 100 million view video, anything less than that feels like a failure. Mm. So you keep doing the same things. Like, as an example, you know, I follow some of these people on TikTok, and there's this one girl who starts every video with, this is the craziest story I've ever heard. And I know why she's doing it. It's because those are her videos that do the best when she hooks you with that one thing. So she just does it every single video. And it's, that's where it's like where creativity goes to die. It's like, okay, cool. You figured out the hack to the algorithm, this one simple trick.
Yeah.
But then you do it over and over and over again because you can't imagine a video not doing as well as what you had done. Like living in that mind space does not seem like a healthy place to be.
I wonder that now that the tech bros are kind of, you know, in positions of influence, I wonder if they're going to do some regulation on the algorithms. They do not seem very sophisticated, let's say, for having such a impactful, you know, position in society, these algorithms. Because like even, you know, like if the girl making the craziest story videos can figure out what the algorithm wants, it's probably not very sophisticated. Right?
Yeah, or is it just that human psychology is so predictable that just the simplest low-hanging fruit just works over and over again, and the algorithm is just revealing that this is how you trick humans into watching more of your video.
Right. Yeah. And maybe that's more of a reason, because if they know that and then they're not like going, let's give people a wider variety of, you know, whatever healthy things or something. Maybe they should look into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's going to happen. I think there's going to be a story in the next 5 years, like TikTok's algorithm is under investigation.
Yeah.
It's got to happen.
Yeah. I mean, the TikTok algorithm, it has been wild to see like different algorithms and how they play. I still think from my user experience, the TikTok one is the best as far as serving me up the content I want to see. It does so well of like, if there's some drama or some topic going on and I watch a video on it, it'll like serve me up like all the adjacent like topics or viewpoints on mm-hmm. that topic, like not necessarily back to back, but within like the next few roles. Like it's like, oh, you're clearly interested in this. Like they get you, they serve it up in a really smart way. Whereas Twitter just feels like it's just throwing so much shit against the wall right now and just hoping something sticks for you.
YouTube's kind of in between. I feel like it's pretty good, but then also you'll get like, why would you think I like this? Like, remember back in the, you know, a couple of years ago, it was just like Ben Shapiro constantly, no matter who you are, you're getting Ben Shapiro shoved up your face. Do you remember? Like you'd be watching a poker video and it's like, what is Ben Shapiro goes talks to college kids?
You would have way more experience than like the way I watch YouTube, or I never use the like For You page or whatever equivalent. You know, I go to YouTube with the intention to watch a specific video. I'll look at like what they're recommending on the side just out of curiosity when I'm watching, but I'm rarely going down a YouTube rabbit hole or just getting suggested stuff.
Yeah. I watch it like TV. So
yeah,
it gives me a
bunch. Do you ever, in that vein, do you ever stumble across a channel where you're like, wow, like I love this production quality, or I love the vibe or what they're doing or this content, and then like I'll follow them and I just found this new creator that I'm actually gonna like keep tabs on now? Does that happen to you?
Sure. Yeah. I'll start following people like, I like this guy's vibe. I mean, doing a professional setting on YouTube definitely helps.
Yeah.
You're more likely to subscribe to it, and you can just tell that they get more followers when they have an in-person nice studio.
It is so true. I'm the exact same way with like any content. I always think of it like if you're watching, you know, think of the equivalent of going to see a professional comedian versus someone doing their first stand-up set. You get nervous for them. You want to feel like you're in good hands. And when you turn on a YouTube video where someone has a polished setup, or whatever, you're like, oh, I'm in good hands. They're not fucking around. They're not going to waste my time. Yeah. Mentally, that is a huge leap. And I notice, even if I'm looking up a tutorial video for something, if I'm like, this isn't a good, you know, camera setup or whatever, I'm like, this probably isn't good advice. Let me go to the next one.
Yeah, that's true. Unless it's so niche that you like, there's only two of them on there, you have to watch it.
It's so hyper specific. How do I change the washer on this? Blah blah blah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Usually tech stuff. Like sometimes tech stuff's really shoddy, but like you have such a specific problem. Speaking of Taylor Mathis, this guy mentioned Shapiro's sister. They have similar attributes, believe it or not. Ben Shapiro's sister.
I literally don't even know what Ben Shapiro's sister looks like.
She looks like Ben Shapiro with giant
boobs. She does. Yeah. There you go. Abigail Roth, American YouTube personality. This is like how I just learned that is it Donald Trump's granddaughter is now a YouTube thing. She makes like golf content. She's really good at golf and has now been interviewing PGA golfers or stuff and is blowing up a bit.
I did. Yeah. Cause I think she's cute, right? She's good. And she's actually pretty decent at golf.
That's on you, Brian. I don't, you know,
hopefully she's 18. allegedly, people are saying, not me. I have no opinion on the matter, of course.
Brian's like, actually, I'm very familiar. I've seen all of her.
I've watched every single second of her content. I do watch Bryson stuff a little bit. I think he does pretty good content. Yeah. Cause he just played a course over here, not too far from here. In one of his videos. So I'm like, oh, I gotta watch that one, you know, like try to break the public, the course record at a public course. And it's like a course you would play, you know, where the greens are shitty and there's spotted, you know, there's spots and divots everywhere. And, he didn't break the record. I think he shot like 4 under, which of course is still awesome, but he was having problems just like we were. Like his ball was in a divot. He couldn't chip out of it. Nothing you can do. The greens are shitty.
Do you think he's doing any kind of a sponsorship deal with those courses? Because he probably brings so much business to them after he plays there and makes that video.
I don't know. I mean, does he need? I mean, he's so rich. I doubt.
Does Mr. Beast need to take an engagement photo wearing his merch, Brian?
Good point. But he's more broken than Bryson, I would say. Mr. Beast is maximizing every square inch he can. Where I think Bryson, I would guess Bryson started it as fun and it was just getting, he was doing so well, he just kept going with it. But maybe not. Maybe he's crazy too.
Yeah. With the one other thing I wanted to tell you, because this has been a topic on the show, we've, you know, talking about the responsible gaming and some of the state legislation, I ran into, and I think I mentioned this on a previous show this week, and someone was asking about in the chat, I hit the Massachusetts deposit limit this week on DraftKings. They wouldn't let me deposit more than $1,000.
Without sending in more info or... That's it. Yeah,
without, and then basically, dude, it has been such a mess. I will say this to everyone. I've come up with a very clever workaround, and I will be able to accept everyone's head-to-heads. I'm not even going to say the workaround because I don't want it to have a loophole closed on me before I can do this. I'll tell you after the show, Brian. But
I bet I know it.
There was, because like there was some weird thing. So last year, I went through a similar thing, and because I had like set or rechanged the deposit, the limits on it or whatever, there's some like frozen period where my limits can't be adjusted. And they're like, we can't help you out until March or something, some X amount of days thing. So like, I literally was in like deposit jail. Even if I drive to like Rhode Island, there's still a cap on, I think it was like 3,000 is the amount on my account that I can get down. And then they're like, then you can send in the stuff, but we won't be able to process this for like a month or whatever. So I'm just like, what the fuck, man? It is such a mess.
So somebody commented earlier, they said, Brian, the libertarian wants regulation on algorithms or something. But this is like the perfect example. There's like 1% of the population that has a problem with this. And we all got to pay for it. And their solutions are always like so stupid and invasive. And, you know, like it's for Pete, clearly he doesn't need to jump through all these hoops and everything, but They got to like act like they're doing something to save the guy who blew his fucking kid's college money on, you know, an over.
I literally even tried because so I have one rep at DraftKings who makes the like Deposit Kingdom League for me, the weekly rake free league. And so I was like trying to ask him, and I was like, dude, like, is there any way I can even like get floated some promotional credits and like pay you guys back? Like, I don't even, I'm just like, is there any creative solution here? And it's just like, no, there's nothing we can do. Nothing we can do. Again, I've come up with, I don't know if the word elegant is the way to say it, an elegant solution, but I've come up with an idea to get money into my account.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say, just do free games and then have them ship you the money.
Well, that I am doing that with a couple of people. If I know, I will say this, like, if you want to play like relatively big and you want to PayPal me the money ahead of time, I will play zero, but you have to PayPal me the money and I'm not risking my reputation to like ghost you on your money. So like you send it to me, we can play for whatever you want. And I will PayPal you the winnings after.
No, it's gotta be a minimum, right? You gotta like minimum what?
Well, that's why I said it would have to be big. Like if it's minimum $100 head to head,
there you go.
And you want to send me your 100 and we can play rake free.
Right.
But
yeah, I feel like people, the government regulation talks to, it's just the show we did with Levitan a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Like people can't like understand, like some people, not everyone, the difference between theoretical and reality. Like, if in theory we could make the algorithms more beneficial to society, yeah, why wouldn't we do that, right? Like, I'd want that. It's just like what you get is Pete not being able to put $1,000 on for his promotion for your job. It's like this is and it's beneficial to DraftKings, and it's really
I'm taking their game format that's dying. And giving, you know, defibrillators to it, resuscitating it back to life. And they won't even let me get money on the site to play.
It's like unironically better content than they do themselves. Like in years, your cash game bet is better. Like they don't do anything. I saw, who was it? One of the ETR guys, I think. Somebody tweeted out, like, why does DraftKings or FanDuel not have a live page to sweat the Millie Maker, best ball? Like news stations would be like showing this, right? Like screenshotting it.
It's wild. Like the fact that, you know, the DK, the big championship, like I had Leone send me the link. so I had the link or whatever to do it. I guess there is technically the thing on the page where you can go and find the live contest or whatever, but there's no easy, you have to like know what you're doing to go find that, whereas I think lots of people would go to a live leaderboard page and sweat out those contests. Even for me, like on Mondays I do the portfolio review, there's no place, like, how isn't it insane that I can't tab around to the contest that I wasn't in because I didn't play the Millie Maker, like, and I don't have the contest results there, but I can't go click on the site and go see what happened in the Millie Maker flagship contest the day before.
Yeah, and just do show like the top 1% of lineups or 5% of lineups or something, and then you're not giving away people's data that don't want it, you know, you don't have to store as much. It's like even that they don't care.
And we've learned so much through best ball, through DFS. People, there is a market. People want to hang out on your site more. They want to hawk leaderboards, they want to engage with it, they want to see things fluctuate by play, real-time scoring. Like, people want to be hyper engaged with this. We can talk about whether that's mentally healthy or a good way to spend your time, but people absolutely want to do that.
Yeah two different things. We can both stuff, like, you're not going to get a Chris Moneymaker effect, you're not going to have like a Daniel Negreanu, you know, Phil Hellmuth. How are you going to build people's, you know, the dream of like, oh, actually there's professional players who do this.
And I was saying too, I was thinking the other day, and part of it is just because I'm so drained by the end of the year, but I was like, you know, there should be a sweat show on Monday night when the Lions and 49ers are playing at the season's end, and you have whatever of the like people who are bouncing around in the top 10 of the BBM finals or whatever, come on a sweat show, swing by, like build out the stakes, get to meet some of the people who are competing for this. And part of it is just like, I personally don't want to host a 4-hour live stream on Monday after doing all this. So, and I'm guessing a lot of people don't, but like that kind of stuff, should definitely exist because people want to be like, who's this guy in third? Like, I don't even think people know the guy who won the BBM, or at least he hasn't come forward yet. I don't think he has a Twitter account. We're having, the third place guy on Ship Chasing tonight, Chris Carlton, he took third. So we'll get to hear from him a little bit, but for the moneymaker effect to happen, we got to be able to put faces and stories right. and names. And that's why it was so cool. My buddy, I was telling you about my buddy, the guy from my high school, like he had a single bullet and had a sick team or whatever. Like those kind of stories are essentially what the moneymaker effect would be for best ball.
Yeah. Well, and now it would be like through podcasts. So like you have the bro win, they sweat them. Then they watch him talk on Ship Chasing or here or whatever. And then, you know, you'll get like the Utica, the Sims in my brain moments, and then people meme it. And so they don't give a shit. They don't care.
Well, even the wit man, or did you say Utica or did you say Whistles?
Utica, the Sims okay. in my brain. Well, was that Whistles? No, that was Utica.
No, that was Utica. I'm talking about the moment where Whistles went on the DK stream and did the initial Whistles Go Woo, and he gaslit all of us into thinking he was just some like drunk dude who got lucky, and we didn't realize he was a gigabrain, you know, data scientist professor who would go on.
In his defense, he might have been drunk during that interview.
But everyone at the time thought that was so cool because it was just like, who the hell is this?
Yeah, going on there? No, I thought, I was like, oh man, I lost this meathead. God damn.
Exactly.
Yeah. DFS. Yeah. That was funny. And then he gave us Shady too. Now Shady's dominating. Didn't he take like second in or third in one of those best balls too? He's winning everything.
Yeah, he's had a massive year. Yeah, but it that stuff has kind of like just ceased to exist. As far as
yep. They tried the three goats or whatever.
Yeah.
Which was fun. And then it went sports betting.
How cool would it be if DraftKings had something like, you know, breakout player of the year, you know, someone, and it could be part based on like results, like you got to have some amount of winnings or whatever, but then like, then there could be a voting, you know, on it.
Yeah.
Maybe like a fan element, maybe like an actual, you know, voting committee that's hand selected other DFS pros who, and so there's some weighted stuff to it, but that would be cool. And then it's like, oh, get a feature story on like, how did you get into DFS at this point? Like, how did you burst on the scene this late into it? You know, stuff like that is so good for the ecosystem.
Remember Tout Wars? And then,
yeah,
you know, we wanted to do something like that. We thought that would be good. And then they did their World Series of DFS or whatever. And they put like, no offense, some of the people we know, but like most of the people we didn't know like at all who they were. And then they tried to do it worldwide for some reason. And they're like Team Germany. It's like, how many DFS pros are in Germany? Team England. Like, of course, England has a couple.
I played for the Dutch team. Anyone else in the Netherlands.
At least use an American Dutch person. I mean, like, Jesus, it was done so so strangely. They just ruined that idea. I think they pivoted. Unfortunately, all the doomers about sports betting were turned out to be pretty much right. They're spending all the money on sports betting ads, which, by the way, speaking of regulations, we all need to root for a sports betting crackdown on no advertising, because that will probably help DFS.
Oh man.
Because they'll use DFS as a gateway drug.
Yeah. Brian, didn't you, you were for a while, you were playing Yahoo DFS Cash. Did you still play that this year?
No, I haven't played Yahoo in a while. Yeah. It got too popular.
Too sweaty.
It's like, do I want to add? Because, you know, when you have more sites, you have more chances to make mistakes. not get your stuff in time, ruin.
When was the last time you played cash?
I might have played the beginning of the year, Yahoo.
Okay.
Beginning football season, I should say.
Okay.
First couple weeks is still. It's still probably pretty good for cash. It's just not. And I mean, speaking of not promoting anything, have they done anything for cash games like promotion and make people want to join it or innovate at all?
No, they just wait for me.
They wait for you. Yeah, week 18 is the only time to play.
Oh man. All right. Brian, you just saw you guys did the Sim Show. I will not be tuning into that. I gotta stay focused on the good plays. What else do you guys got going on? I saw you've been doing some in-game syndicate videos.
Yeah, we did two this week. So yesterday, what did we do? Dupes. We talked about dupes in a second dupe video.
Nice.
It was just me and Dan in that one. And then I'm uploading right now, actually, an NBA model video, like how to model using historical data with me, Adam, because Adam was doing his own model and he was asking us questions. And I was like, let's just make this a video. So that's going to be up here in like 5-10 minutes. I wanted to ask you a question though, about the cash game thing really quick. We were talking about on the Sim Show. Are you I'm pretty sure you're up over the years though, right? In the cash game, yeah. Week 18.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever had a losing year. I think I've been like between 50 to 60% every year.
There you go. Okay. So yeah. That's what I thought. I told Davis. I think he might have been shaming you. Your good name, Pete.
What did he say?
Does he even win? Something like that, I think.
Send me a head.
I have to go to it. I'm sure people are watching.
The guy that built such a dog shit lineup that he has to swap every week.
Oh, he did. No, he said whenever we play, we have the same team, so it doesn't matter.
I'm going to have to teach that kid a lesson. I'll stuff him in a locker on the Gilcast this week when I hop in there.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You do that show.
The other stuff for me. Yeah, we're going to do a winner's circle episode of Ship Chasing tonight. Like I mentioned, Chris Carlton finished third in BBM. Going to have a couple other winners swing by. Dricko finished second in a FFPC contest. Tomorrow. Cash game show tomorrow with Cardi. So no JM. This week, had to give JM the tournament boot. We're bringing in a cash game thought leader, Derek Cardi. We'll both get our dome boners on for week 18. And then we'll still do off and on the clock with the badge bros. But I'm not talking about scroll down plays. I'm just talking about the best plays. We'll probably build some pick-ems, but I'm going to be building them with insurance. You can never be too careful when you're making pick-ems. And then I haven't decided yet if I'm going to do an After Dark or a Cram this week. I asked some people in the Discord if they had a preference, but I'll probably end up doing one of those as well. Anything else for you, Brian?
No, I think that's it. It'd be nice if we can – let's try to find the winner of BBM. He should go on one of our shows.
Yeah, I want to say he cleaned up on DK as well. I want to say he had a stochastic avatar, so maybe Osimo could smoke him out for us.
Oh, okay.
There. But yeah, I haven't heard from him yet. All right. Send me a head-to-head. Revert Z-Top on DraftKings. Have a great rest of your week. And, of course, congrats to Mr. Beast. Peace.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.